Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Tuesday, April 23rd. 45 degrees under mostly cloudy skies here in Park City. 49 degrees in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Guiboy. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Tuesday to you. Weather-wise, we're not going to see too many drastic changes from what we saw yesterday, but we might get a little bit more in the way of cloud coverage as we check in with partly sunny skies across the Wasatch back. With daytime highs, that'll be ranging quite a bit above our seasonal averages. We'll top out at 66 degrees this afternoon in Park City, while we'll likely be in the low 70s down in the Heber Valley. So a beautiful day if you want to spend some time outside with the warmth. But with a little bit of moisture in the sky, there will be at least the potential for a few afternoon spotty showers and maybe an occasional rumble of thunder. If I had to put a percentage on it, roughly a 20% chance throughout the Wasatch back. So while most will likely get through the day dry, just don't be surprised if there is some wet weather that finds you, and just keep a watchful eye to the sky just in case. We'll hold on to that chance as we go from this afternoon to the evening, but by the overnight hours, we'll be looking at partly cloudy skies with the overnight lows heading back into the low and mid 40s, very similar compared to what we're waking up to this morning. For our Wednesday, high pressure will be keeping our weather mostly on the quiet side of things under mostly sunny skies. Daytime high will once again come in right around 65 degrees in Park City, right around 70 degrees in Heber, and we'll see mostly sunny skies. But by tomorrow, our southerly winds will start to increase, so it will become a little bit breezy, especially by the afternoon, with a southerly wind anywhere between 10 and 15 miles per hour, with maybe the occasional gust over 20 miles per hour. Even though high pressure keeps our weather quiet mostly tomorrow, that high pressure will be moving away. And as we round out the work week and move into the weekend, we're going to be moving into a much more unsettled pattern. We'll drop to the low 40s on Wednesday night, and then by Thursday, we'll be looking at a daytime high in the upper 50s, still a little bit above average. But the thing is, as we go throughout the day on Thursday, the chance of wet weather looks like it'll begin to increase, roughly a 20% chance first thing in the morning, and by the afternoon, about a 70% chance of finding mainly rain in Park City, with that daytime high coming in at 58 degrees. We'll hold on to a chance for showers as we go into our Thursday night, and with the overnight low expected to drop into the mid and upper 30s, there's a chance that we could see some snow along with the rain. And then on Friday, we have a secondary system moving in from the northwest, and I think the system on Friday will be stronger than the one that we see on Thursday. So we'll be looking at roughly a 90% chance of showers, a daytime high only coming in at 44 degrees, a drastic change compared to what we're going to see here the next couple of days. And by Friday night, with the overnight low close to freezing, could be looking at a time of rain and snow showers. But I think the bulk of the snow that we're going to see between Thursday and Friday will mainly be above 7,500 feet. Now, we'll continue to watch that as we get a little bit closer based on what we're seeing with the temperatures. Saturday will likely hold on to a pretty good chance of rain and snow showers, at the daytime high once again coming in the middle 40s, dropping to freezing on Saturday night. And then by Sunday into early next week, the chance of wet weather looks like it's going to begin to go down, maybe a slight chance on Sunday, mostly sunny skies by Monday. And by Sunday into Monday, temperatures will begin to warm back up. We should be around 50 degrees on Sunday and back in the mid to upper 50s by Monday, Leslie.
All right, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome.
The Park City Wine Festival has announced events for this year's festival, October 3rd through the 5th at Canyons Village. It'll feature grand tastings with more than 100 wineries, live music, classroom-style seminars, and a wine hike through some of Park City's scenic trails. Tickets for the grand tastings and Best of Fest go on sale this morning at 10 a.m. A link to purchase tickets and for more information is available online at kpcw.org. Well, Summit County has announced its e-bike share program returning next month. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports it's adding four new locations as well.
Summit Bike Share will roll out May 14th this year in time for National Bike to Work Day, May 17th. The Centerville Basin Area Service makes e-bikes available for rent at docking stations from Jeremy Ranch to Quinn's Junction. There are four new ones: Park City Hospital, Lincoln Station Apartments, Park City Visitors Center, and Frostwood Village at Canyons. Summit County removed stations within Park City municipal boundaries to aid the city's snow removal, but those will be reinstalled this season. Here's County Engineer Steve Dennis.
We've done a lot of work this off-season to kind of clean up some of our internal processes and make sure we're putting out a really awesome fleet of bikes and stations this year.
That work included surveying residents last year and hiring mechanics. This will be Summit County's first full year operating the e-bike service in-house. When it launched in 2017, Summit Bike Share was the first all-electric bike share program in the U.S. A 30-minute ride will be $4, then 18 cents per minute after that. A four-day pass goes for $20, a monthly pass is $45, and a season pass is $130. The county will be organizing sign-up events in the coming month, which will offer discounts on season passes and helmets.
We heard a lot of the feedback. There were a lot of concerns about safety, kind of general bike etiquette and proper use of bikes and signaling, both on trails and roadways, as well as helmets.
The county will offer e-bike rated helmets below market price at $30. They will be for purchase, not for rent. For more information and a map of stations, visit summitbikeshare.com. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council meets in work session Wednesday starting at 4:30 at the Summit County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio now with a meeting preview is Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
First off, the council will get a presentation from the Summit County Community, Summit County Clubhouse. Is this a request for opportunity, funding, or just an opportunity to let the council know what they do?
I think just an opportunity to let the council know what they do. I believe we have given them a grant in the past. I wanted to thank the council formally and just educate all of us about how they serve adults with mental health challenges. So looking forward to that.
Okay. Let's see. The council will also discuss and consider a possible interlocal agreement with Camas, Oakley, and Francis for the funding of State Route 32 corridor and the city center's plan. So this is a state highway. Why are municipalities and county putting up any money for it?
Well, it is a $150,000 grant, 10% of which is a local match, and it's a technical planning assistance grant. And I think it's just UDOT kind of trying to get these communities all together. I think individually it's hard for all of us to do this. So the county can do a little portion in Camas, but this is a collective effort between the three cities and the county, and I think we're going to look at the corridor and what we can do with the corridor, what UDOT maybe can partner with us to do, and also just really evaluating those city centers. How that road is such an important part of that city center, and how will that affect those cities, and what can we do to bring tourists or businesses or what to the community.
What are some of the ideas that are being floated for?
I think everything's on the table right now. I've been in previous communities where UDOT has come in and widened roads, put in medians, really made things look nicer. Usually they ask the community to participate in those funding efforts, but if Camas specifically is interested in slowing traffic down, or Oakley wants to beautify things, that those will be taken into account with this plan.
So what about pedestrian and bike paths?
Absolutely. All that should be on the table. And again, this corridor runs through those three communities. So hopefully we'll do like a conjunctive effort in evaluating them all together, not make things kind of piecemeal, which is probably what we would do individually if we tried to plan those individually.
Now, I thought I read in the staff report that the project's supposed to begin this summer. So if you don't have a plan, how can you start?
Well, this summer is actually, is my understanding, is that's when the plan kicks off, not doing any construction or anything like that, just the corridor plan itself.
Okay, and will that then identify future funding?
Exactly, yep, that's exactly right. UDOT should hopefully be a really important partner in that.
All right, and how much is the county contributing here?
The county's putting in $5,000 of the $15,000 that is our local match, and we expect the cities to do the other $10,000.
All right. Then at 5 o'clock, a discussion and possible approval for the Restaurant Tax Advisory Committee's 2024 grant recommendations. Money comes from the 1% restaurant tax that's charged on all meals. The committee has just over $4 million to award, 55 applicants representing $5.3 million in grants. So was the process used to decide?
Yeah, the restaurant tax board gets together, and it is not a fun process. I haven't participated with this specific committee yet, but we always get more requests than we have funds for. $4 million is nothing to sneeze at. That's very important, but they evaluate each grant individually, and they do it for how much tourism is it going to bring to our community? Is there a sustainable tourism piece of it? Is it a new program? Is there a match that they put into it? So all those different criteria are put into a pot, and we're grateful for their work. County Council gets to make those decisions based on what it's presented to them, but they usually try to go with the committee's recommendations.
Now basically, it's to get more butts in seats, yeah?
Right. Yeah. Bring more folks to eat, more restaurant food and then create more tax and just better and beautify our community.
All right. Now, the biggest grants kind of running through the staff report go to the Park City Area Lodging Association, almost $400,000, another $350,000 to the Park City Restaurant Association, HPCA, Main Streets.
I think Sundance was in there as well.
Yeah. So what is it? Basically marketing dollars that they're doing?
I think it is marketing. It's anything to bring tourism to the community. And I think a lot of those are more of your traditional request funds every year and probably receive funds most years. But there is a piece there that has some new projects, and looking forward to hearing more about those.
Yeah. Do the funds need to go back to the areas from which the tax money was raised? So certainly Main Street's a hotbed. Kimball Junction probably as well.
Yeah, I don't think it's exactly in those areas. Obviously, it's in the county, but I don't think it has to. A certain amount has to go to the downtown Main Street area. But I think those things are taken into consideration in an informal fashion.
And as you mentioned, some new projects. One of those that caught my eye was the Excellence in the Community Summit Sounds. So these will be free concerts both in Park City and Colville.
Yes, and I think that sounds really exciting. We have quite a little burgeoning music scene here in the community, and I think this will help that a great deal.
So will they go ahead and approve it and hand out the money?
It's up to the council's discretion. If there's something else that needs to be evaluated, they'll take that into consideration. But I can't remember how much time we allotted for this. I think it was maybe 20 minutes. So there's maybe some discussion usually, but I think that we expect the committee to do the work of vetting these things out, and I hope the council will, you know, respect that work and for the most part take that into consideration and adopt those recommendations.
All right, next on the agenda is an annexation petition to annex into Park City. It's known as the Robbins Annexation at the base of Iron Mountain, it looks like. So this parcel feels like it's in Park City,
it does, actually, in
unincorporated Summit County, so that's just a formality here?
I never want to say it's always a formality, because that's your best laid plans are 10-minute items, but it's surrounded by Park City. It's in the Park City Annexation Plan area map. It's just about an acre, and it does feel like it's maybe already part of Park City, so it likely will be something that the council will be in favor of.
All right. The council's been meeting in a lot of closed-door sessions recently, all for litigation, and again tomorrow as well. Are we talking just one lawsuit, or do you discuss several?
I can't say exactly what we're talking about, but there has been more than one opportunity to talk about some litigation. Usually that is Margaret Olson and her office in the county attorney's office updating the council on the current status. We haven't had a lot of new or interesting litigation efforts to talk about. It's usually an update of something that's ongoing.
Any news with regard to Dakota Pacific?
Today, no, but I think we will have some news. We're probably trying to put a second tier plan together, as we had the public open house that was canceled or postponed. So we're trying to put together another. What does the next couple of weeks look like, and how do we get to a decision, whatever that decision is, and up and down? So I think we might have some more information tomorrow, and we'll try to daylight that during the council meeting.
All right. Last week during council comments, the council discussed the news about Sundance. Again, which is going to be searching for alternative locations besides Park City. Park City, of course, will continue to be an option. Does the county council have a say in this?
I think so. We're trying to be as involved as we can be in letting Sundance know how important they are to our community. I think you probably heard Councilmember Roger Armstrong mention that last week, not only daylighting that it was happening that even that day, but how important that Sundance is to our community. So that's going to be something we're watching. We have interacted with Park City Municipal, with Jennifer and her team at the Chamber. So we want to be part of the RFI moving forward. And if we can help, Sundance, as I just mentioned, they've got some of the restaurant tax grants, and we've got given them other grants through Rap Cultural, and we'd like to continue to evolve and make sure they know that partnership's very important to us.
Any idea what that total amount is between the two?
I know the I think they asked for $130,000 last year and received about $100,000. That was in rep cultural. I'm not sure about restaurant traditionally what they've received.
Okay. And what about any updates on how to spend the child care funds? Summit County had put in $130,000 in its budget this year. Any idea how much has been handed out?
I don't know how much we've spent. We have, Janet Young has taken that on from the county manager's office and is partnering with Park City in their ad hoc child care group. So I don't know how much has been spent. We have some employees that have taken advantage of that FSA that we offered. I think we had maybe 5% of our employee base take care of that. I think it was maybe 20 to 30 people. So we are also facilitating child care centers. We've had two that are talking about opening. I think one's already open and one is starting to open up here in the Glen Wild area. So we plan on spending every dime that we've allocated for the child care in the 2024 budget.
All right. Let's see. I guess once you kind of start it, though, I mean, are you kind of on the hook for annual contributions?
We did plan that to be an annual contribution. It didn't come from one-time funds, so we hope that it is a reoccurring. And, of course, every year, everything that we put in the budget, we rebudget. Everything is competing with everything else, so as other needs ramp up, there may be a reason to ramp back down. We did some for the seniors this year, and I think that's been very well received, but there are maybe some more requests coming from them as well, so we'll have to evaluate that just as we do every year during that budget process.
All right. Finally, I wanted to ask you, what's the latest with the Jeremy and Pinebrook roundabout artwork?
We received 74 responses to that request for qualifications. I think the Park City Summit County Arts Council narrowed it down to three. They have received those three proposals that are actually on the Jeremy Ranch and Pine Brook roundabouts. They are meeting on April 30th. I believe it's at 4 p.m. at Richens to further evaluate those. And I think we have an end of May deadline that we want to make this decision. So I think things are really coming together. The three proposals were very interesting. I think some really hit the mark. Some maybe missed it, in my opinion, a little bit. But it was beautiful, beautiful art, and some very well-respected artists from around the country. And it's going to be very interesting to see what goes in there and how that construction goes.
Yeah, and I guess, but most recently, the vote was delayed just because the arts advisory board wasn't happy with what had been selected.
I wouldn't say they weren't happy. They did ask some questions of the applicants. One of them, and then they asked the county actually to. They had a hard time seeing the scale, what 25 feet tall looks like. They asked our public works director, John Angel, went and put a piece of equipment there and raised it to 25 feet. And then we took some pictures and shared those with the arts board so they can get a sense of what 25 feet looks like. So they had some questions, asked the artists to come back with some answers, and I think they've done that. So I think they're ready to hopefully move forward and make a recommendation. This is going to be a really important piece of art in our community. It's the entrance. I think a lot of people will get off of Jeremy Ranch. They all know, everybody knows where it is, and I think you're going to be able to see it as you come down the hill, and I think it's going to be really fun, something we talk about, and it may not be well received by everybody. Art is in the eye of the beholder, as we all know, but it's going to be really interesting to see what happens.
All right, so we're talking about just tweaking the current proposals as opposed to starting over.
Yes, I believe, I don't think starting over is an option. I think we could ask for some changes to some things. I think we could go back to the qualified list and ask for some proposals from other artists as well. But I believe that there's an art, one of those proposals in there that is likely to work.
Okay. Anything else, Shane?
Maybe one more thing on our agendas now. We've included an area called Council Communications. We've mirrored that after what Park City does. It's just an initiative to communicate to the council and to the public any items that may be, for their information, but we don't really need a formal presentation. So I'd ask people to look at, as they look at the agendas, to look at that Council Communications and just review what's in there.
So you did have like a council comment section, or did you just rename it?
Yeah, well, the manager and the council still have an area, but this is different. This is from the staff, so there'll be like a full-blown staff report. So it's something we'd ask the council to read and review, and sometimes they may have questions. They may ask them to come to council in a future date and present. But a lot of times we're doing these presentations for 5 and 10 minutes that we really don't need to. We just want them to know something or want them to be aware of something, and we want to daylight things to the public as well. So one more way we're trying to be transparent.
Okay, Shane, thanks for your time this morning.
Leslie, thank you.
It's 8:28. Good morning. Police arrested a man at Park City's No Name Saloon after staff reported him filming in the women's bathroom over the weekend. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on that.
An employee told Park City Police a man was putting his phone under the stall divider in the women's restroom at No Name Saloon Saturday evening and recording video. According to a probable cause statement, police arrested the 35-year-old man as he was leaving the bar shortly after midnight. During a search, police found a blue Motorola phone in a black case, as well as marijuana and cocaine in his possession. The probable cause statement lists offenses of voyeurism or recording and drug possession. The man was released from the Summit County Jail Sunday on the condition he doesn't return to No Name. Charges haven't been filed as of Monday afternoon. Park City Police spokesperson Lieutenant Jay Randall declined to comment further, citing a pending investigation. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
This year's annual bike swap will be held this weekend. And on the phone with details, I have the head coach for the Park City High School Mountain Bike Club, Pete Stoughton. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. So just this used to be done by young riders. What, the high school club took it over a few years ago?
That's right. There was a really great handoff between Julie Minahan and ourselves. And with her kids now graduating and from Young Riders into our program, it's also a great handoff so that we can support the growing program of the bike team.
Okay, so the bike swap will be back at the Utah Film Studios at Quenge Junction. Give us the details in terms of when and where.
That's right. People, it's a bike swap in that people can sell their new or lightly used or used bike apparel, gear, and or bikes, mountain bikes, road bikes, e-bikes. And the team takes a percentage of the sales to offset the cost of the whole bike swap and as a fundraiser. And drop-off begins this Wednesday at 4 o'clock over at the Utah Film Studios, who's a generous host for the week. And the sale of items starts on Saturday morning at 8 a.m.
All right. So how much time do people have to drop off the bikes and the equipment?
They can drop off. It'll be Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 4 to 7 o'clock. And those are our times. A lot of people actually are utilizing our online check-in process. They just have to drop off between those dates and times.
Okay, so how does that online check-in work? Where do people go?
They go to our website, and there's a link right on there. It's too complicated to say. But on our website, which is pchsmtb.com, there is a swap link, and they can go ahead and click on the link there. They can enter in all their information for their gear that they're selling, and then when they come to drop it off, we literally check it in, make sure there's a picture on there so the items match, and they're good to go. So it makes it a pretty smooth, seamless process.
Okay. And in terms of what people, you know, thinking they're going to drop their bikes off, what should they do to ensure that they don't have to pick the bike up on Sunday?
Well, clean it is first and foremost. No one wants to buy a dirty bike. Or sell it, you know, according to the condition that it's in. A lot of us, especially myself, have an affinity for our bikes, and we love our little rides, but sometimes others may not appreciate it to the same extent. So pricing it ready to sell is really important. We also do have a high price and a low price, so people can sell it on Saturday for their high price, and then all items typically go down in price on Sunday because people don't want to pick up their goods. They want to actually sell it. So So that's other than cleaning it and make sure it's in good condition, that would be the other strategies.
All right. As you mentioned, the high school mountain bike club gets a percentage. How much?
We take 20%, which helps. Again, we cover our costs of running the program and running the bike swap. And we're really grateful, though, that the Utah Film Studios is donating the space. And so that's a real big cost offset. But we do fundraise for our scholarship riders, for maintaining our low program fees, and the other kind of costs associated with a 240-person team.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty impressive. How much are you hoping to raise?
We usually try to raise about $10,000 that weekend. You know, anything more than that is icing on top of the cake, and we're really excited.
Besides bikes, I mean, what else do you accept? Are helmets a go or no?
Used helmets are not. You know, we just don't know the condition of those, and we don't want someone to, you know, get into an accident and their head hit. It's not a safe helmet. But other than that, pretty much everything else is good to go. Like I said, road bikes, mountain bikes, e-bikes, kids' bikes. We have sunglasses. We have gloves. Some people will bring apparel if it's in good condition. Shoes, wheels, components, bike racks. There's quite a bit. Anything that is loosely associated with bikes.
Okay. In years past, people have started lining up early. When should people get there Saturday morning?
If you want a guarantee, you're in there first take. We see people before 6 o'clock. It's just like the ski swap. People line up and they'll camp out. It does look like it's going to be a little chilly on Saturday morning, so make sure you have, you know, your down jacket and whatnot. Don't put that ski gear away yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you mentioned, the soggy weather, so all of the bikes and stuff are inside then?
That's right. It's inside the Utah Film Studios, Stage 1. And so it's a great day to look at bikes because it's been so nice all week, and then we get kind of a drizzly, nasty day, and that's a great time to go look for bikes. Yeah. So you're ready for the next time.
Okay, any cost to get in?
No cost, yeah. That's we don't charge a cost to the people who are perusing and looking. That's how we, you know, we don't fundraise that way. We fundraise through the actual sale of the item.
All right. And are people able to kind of test drive the bikes?
So yes. We have helmets available for them to use. And then if for some reason they want to bring their own helmet, we'll also have pedals and so forth so that they can jump on the bike and try it out. It will be a little bit wet, so that may not be the best option if it's wet outside, but it will be an option.
All right. So when you talk about pedals, people do take their pedals off their bikes before selling them?
Yeah, people do. There's some particularity about, like, which pedals people like. So sometimes people just take them off and then we'll put flats on so that they can try the bike. But some people have different, whether they're SPDs or time or look or whatnot. So, with all of the different type of pedals, we just make it's easier for us to take off the pedals. And then sometimes they'll sell them separately.
Yeah. Okay. Now, if the items don't sell, how does somebody get their stuff back?
Well, there is a pickup from 3 to 5 on Sunday, so people can do that. People can donate the bikes. We actually do hunt and look for bikes that are, because we have about 15 kids that are on scholarship that we loan out the bikes. So we have a small arsenal of bikes, and each year we refresh those. Sometimes we, after a couple of years, give the bikes to the kids. So we are always looking for bikes. And then last and certainly not least is the Bike Collective. If people do not pick up their items by 5 p.m., there's this amazing organization down in Salt Lake who does a lot of good, and they repurpose bikes into their community in Salt Lake. So the Bike Collective will come up and pick those up. So it's really important if they didn't sell their bike and they want it back, they need to come on Sunday before 5 p.m.
Okay, and now my understanding, the hours Saturday morning 8 to 5 and then Sunday 11 to 3, again with pickup from 3 to 5.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Finally, just so is the team out there competing yet?
Oh, that's a great question. Technically, we're not out competing yet. We don't technically start our season till June 1st, but I'm sure you've all seen our kiddos out there riding, training. We have probably about 20 or so kids who are doing the early season iCup racing, midweeks, or national races. And we're really excited. Haley Batten and a bunch of other pro cyclists are coming to town. I'm looking forward to doing a group ride with them, hopefully. And that's for the Soldier Hollow Pan American Games. So, yeah, our kids are out there training, and really appreciate all the support for the kids.
So you mentioned 240 members of the team, what, 9th through 12th?
Yes. Well, no, 7th through 12th, but 150 of those are 9th through 12th.
Okay. Where do you go? I mean, you got to have a bunch of coaches and.
But, yeah, it's, with 240 kids, we have to have we have about 80 to 90 parents, coaches, community members who are excited to ride with kids. So I work with some what we call squad leaders, and we train those coaches up. We follow the NICA Utah League training protocols and. Man, it's a volunteer organization except for a few small paid positions. And it's really great how the whole community comes together to get kids on bikes and to foster that cycling community. And so, yeah, we're always looking for great coaches, speaking to Leslie. And we're looking for all types of coaches because we have kids who are brand new on bikes and we have kids who are pro-level racers. So, we cover the gamut, and we're always looking for a few good men and women.
Okay, Pete. Anything else you want to mention?
Nope, that's it. We're just excited for the bike season and the summer to come around so we can enjoy the trails that are so amazing here in Park City.
Okay, looking forward to it. Pete, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you. Have a great one.
That's Park City High School head coach, mountain bike coach, Pete Stoughton. Again, the bike sale will be held at Quinn's Junction Saturday, 8 to 5, Sunday, 11 to 3. Pickup is from 3 to 5, and you can drop off your bike starting tomorrow, Wednesday, so Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at the Utah Film Studios from 4 to 7 p.m. KPCW News Time, again, 8:40.
Hi, I'm Julie Hopkins with Keller Williams Real Estate. I love our great community and all the amazing nonprofits that make it the fantastic place it is. And it's a pleasure to support the KPCW Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher to stay up to date on the critical issues facing our community, as well as the human interest stories that are the heartbeat of our town. Real estate information, jhparkcity.com.
KPCW News Time now. 8:41. Good morning. Well, Park City Mountain closed a day after Deer Valley Resort this year, and skiers still wanted more. KPCW's Connor Thomas was out there and has this report.
Lines were short at Crescent Express and Silver Lode Express Monday, leaving plenty of room on the runs. But the parking lot was full of tailgaters, like Adam Walker.
I'm about to ski some straight mashed potatoes, if you will.
A little skier named Logan was more to the point. She said everyone was
skiing,
which she thought was
good.
A more seasoned skier named Tom remembers those days.
I don't know that I made closing day as a 9-year-old, but I was here.
Okay.
skied every season since 63.
All right. How are you feeling today?
Good.
All right.
It's skiing really nice today. They could be open another week. There's nobody here, but they could be open another week.
Fair enough.
That's longtime local Tom Clyde, known for his newspaper column More Dogs on Main and emceeing the annual Park City Follies. It wasn't only locals out there, though. Tennessean Ben Doggy was sad to see the season end.
It's a lot better than expected. I mean, snow condition is still nice. It hasn't got slushy yet. There's plenty of it on top here, and it's a shame they're closing today.
He was all smiles, though, as was ski instructor Nick Burnley, who was off the clock.
So we're out here just getting a few laps in, going to go hit the wiggle a couple of times, enjoy the sunshine. And it's one of the few days you get to come out, ride, dress like a goofball, and just, you know, enjoy being out here.
What's your outfit of choice today?
So I went with the Hawaiian shirt, suspenders, the captain, the sailor captain's hat, and some aviators.
That's the Wiggle on Widowmaker he's referring to. Crescent, Silverlode, First Time, and Three Kings were spinning closing day. Canyons Village closed the day before on April 21st. Three Kings had the longest line of the four, with plenty of skiers and riders enjoying the DJ near the base. Another DJ set up at Miner's Camp below Silverlode. Salt Lake City-based bluegrass group Pixie and the Party Grass Boys played Mountain Village to round out the day. Now that downhill skiing is closed, uphill is too. Skinning up Home Run is no longer allowed. Park City Mountain's target date to begin summer operations is June 8th. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Longtime Park City resident Erin Brown grew up in Park City, recently moved to Oakley in order to start her equine-centered rescue. She joins me now in the studio along with her lead trainer, Lizzie Lynch, to tell us more. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing good. Erin, maybe start with you and just give us a little bit of idea about your background and why a rescue was something you wanted to do.
Yeah. So, yes, as you mentioned, I grew up here in Park City and have been riding horses since I can remember. And in fact, my first real horse that I sort of owned was a rescued thoroughbred straight off the track. So I kind of, right from the beginning, that was in my blood. And then 10 and a half years ago, my sister and I, who also is a local, she and I rescued a horse up in kind of on the border of Washington State. And she was in a kill pen. Her name is Lola now. And so she was sort of the impetus for us going down the rabbit hole of the horse industry. And when I say that, I mean like capital H, capital I, horse industry. And so from there, we just researched everything, learned everything, and were quite devastated to hear what was really happening with horses throughout the states and around the world, of course. And then 3 years ago now, I rescued a Mustang. He's from a Nevada herd that, in fact, no longer exists from roundups. The Mustang story is a whole separate situation. But anyway, I rescued him from an auction up in Billings, Montana. So it turns out there are a lot of places to rescue horses from that are in dire need. And in fact, we can get to it later, but Lizzie and I are heading to an auction later, actually the beginning of May. So anyway, I'll let Lizzie introduce herself before I go on.
Well, I'll get you in just a second. Because let's just kind of take a step back though. I mean, what is it that you then provide? I mean, you've got 60 acres out in Oakley?
That would be my dream. No, I have 3 acres in Oakley, and then we have a wonderful family out in Heber that is also sort of graciously let us use their property as well. And that facility is much larger than me. The horses that are currently on my property in Oakley are what I call our residents, our rescue ranchito residents. So these are horses and mules that sort of represent different parts of the horse industry. And so they're sort of going to stay with Rescue Ranchito forever. And I use sort of their stories to expose what's going on. There's a lot of different facets to it.
So how many horses do you have to take care of?
So I've got, currently I have 3 horses. One of them is in training, the fourth, and then a pony and a mini mule.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
So as I introduced Lizzie, I mean, you're the lead trainer. So what does that mean when a horse is in training?
Yeah, so we bring horses home and we kind of let them have some downtime, see what they need, they get the care that they need. And then it's my job to listen to them and see what they want to do, right? And so some of these horses I just do super basic training and they just kind of hang out. Some of these horses I'll retrain them and they'll go to be, you know, a kid's horse, or they'll go to be a horse that's ridden on the trails. So I give them all the tools they need to succeed, and then we rehome them and find them the next chapter in their life.
So what's your background with horses?
Oh, boy. So I started riding like 11 or 12 years ago, and I'm a 3-day eventer, so jumping. So I've got 2 of my own horses where I compete all over the country. And I just made the elite athletes team for the third year. Yep. So competing my own horses all over the country and riding for the U.S. And now helping Erin.
Yeah. So. Well, it can't be cheap to feed and maintain one horse, and I guess let alone several. So especially if they have special needs.
Yes.
I mean, is that
all of them? So that's the big thing, is all of the ones that come out of the auction, they need a lot of care, right? So they come out in really rough shape. So that's step number one, is making them feel better, and then retraining from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess why were they abandoned, or why were they put into kill,
sure,
you know, pens?
Sure. So yeah, I'll speak directly from experience. We're still in April, so the beginning of this month, I was down in Bowie, Texas, which is kind of a small town right outside of Dallas, and there is a livestock auction there, and specifically equines, although they are considered livestock. And I was there sort of to bear witness and observe what was going on, and then potentially rescue an animal that spoke to me. But basically, they're there for a reason. Either the owner can no longer care for them, or they have some sort of medical issue. I mean, I saw anything from emaciated horses to crippled horses.
So many that went through there with just broken legs.
Yep, like actual broken legs. Yep. Maybe a horse that I feel like hadn't seen food in a very long time. Yeah. We rescued a little pony named Tika, and she's got some sort of crazy issue in her stifle, which is like equivalent to our knee. And so there's a lot of reasons. I mean, usually it is that horse, mule, donkey no longer performs for a human, and so they're considered sort of worthless to the human, and then sent to auction.
There's probably a lot more out there than you're aware of. How do you decide which ones to save?
Yeah, great question. So at the risk of sounding a little woo-woo, they speak to me, to be quite honest with you. I think some of them are super obvious. Also last auction, I rescued a sort of larger draft mule, and she just was totally crippled and was being abused by the person who had originally purchased her. And so I just sort of was overcome with this need to rescue her. And so that was her. Her name is Hazel. And then Tika, I was in the pen with her, and I just saw her, and I fell in love with her immediately. So it is kind of like that. I think some of them are so obvious that they need help that you feel the need to step in, and then others just sort of speak to you.
And that's very much the first day of the auction, because they're 4 days long. So the first day is you kind of walk around, see what's going on, see the horses, and then from there you decide which ones you want to bring home. Which is hard not to bring all of them.
So I guess you've started a nonprofit.
Correct.
With hopes that community is going to help you.
Correct.
Like,
yeah. Thanks, Leslie. Yes. Yeah. I mean, currently, I thought the community was fabulous at the last auction. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of donations. But then, yeah, it'll be donation based moving forward. And then, you know, I'm hoping to have some more sustained donations. I have a Patreon account for Rescue Ranchito. But then also, I think people get motivated to donate at the auctions, of course, because there's immediate need for donations to rescue the horses and then, of course, to care for them afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess in many cases, the horses are still rideable. So you rehab them,
yeah,
bring them back to normal, and then what?
Well, actually, I wish that were the case, because that would, of course, make the process easier. But no, they're not. So, in fact, the pony Tika, we had hopes that she was going to be rideable, but her injury on her back leg is too severe for her to really be rehabbed enough to be retrained and then rehomed. I mean, we will rehome her, but it'll have to be sort of as a pasture companion.
And the rehoming process is, they will be adopted out, essentially. Yeah. So they're not going to be sold, so for no money. And that's kind of my job, is to figure out exactly where they want to be, right? So Tika, for example, she's not going to be able to be ridden. Can she go be a wonderful kid's pony to be loved on and just spoiled? Absolutely. So that's kind of what I try and focus is what do they want to do? And it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be ridden. But no, they're not sold for money.
Yeah, we adopt them out. And We have yet to do that. Yeah. So, well, we can come back to that. But yeah. There'll most likely be an adoption fee just to ensure that the person is serious about the situation and then, of course, supports our efforts. But yeah, no, they won't be sold per se.
Yeah. So do you open up then the ranch there so that people come and, and maybe?
Yeah. So throughout the summer, there'll be plenty of like smaller scale volunteer opportunities. But we also have four, I call them horse bathing dinners. No, we are not actually bathing the horses. It's more akin to forest bathing. So it's like a beautiful dinner that my sister and I will cater. And then we get to just go out into the pasture and spend time with the horses, which just hearing me say it doesn't maybe elicit any feelings, but it is incredible to just be with the horses. No pressure. They don't have to perform. They don't owe you anything. You just get to be with them. And it's pretty special. And then hopefully, you know, we'll have like Lizzie will be there and she can speak to the retraining process. But yeah, so we've got four of those throughout the summer, as well as two kids days where I would like to have some kids come out and learn basic horsemanship and then, you know, play.
So have you set those dates then?
Yeah. Yes. So if I have a website, of course, rescueranchito.org, and then under the support tab is all the events are under there, as well as ways to donate.
Okay. Can people sponsor a horse and then actually kind of come take care of it?
I mean, Leslie, you're hired. Thank you. So yeah, it's the weirdest name. It's called Patreon. And it's a website that houses all sorts of, well, everything, but nonprofits can use it to have people sustain them like monthly. So you can go onto the Rescue Ranchito Patreon and sponsor a horse, which would help me, you know, help us. Mm-hmm. Pay for that horse every month, and you can, and then you'll get special content on that horse and updates, and you know you can, because a lot. I actually have four people that are sponsoring Choya the mini mule, and that I get that because he's
the best,
weird
ever.
And amazing and fabulous. But you know, if you have like a connection to one of our residents, then you can sponsor them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and part of your mission is education, and that you want people to know about, as you put it, the capital H horse, capital I industry.
Yeah,
what is it about that people don't know about?
Well, I think there's, as I've mentioned before, a lot of different facets. There's the Mustang situation that is really close to my heart, and there's a whole situation going on there. I mean, I have three Mustangs now that all ended up at auction, and they should never end up there. But it's more just this. So when I say industry, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, horses are livestock, which I think people don't realize either. So they're in the same category as cows and chickens and pigs and sheep versus, say, a dog or a cat. And to me, a horse is more in the pet category than the livestock category. But when they're in that category, then they are a commodity, and so are in turn worth, you know, like money, like dollars and cents. And in terms of this, it's really their weight, because they get shipped across the border to be slaughtered. And so I think people don't know that. I mean, it's illegal to slaughter a horse in the United States. I think it was 2007, the last two slaughterhouses closed in the States. And now we ship them across the borders, either into Canada or into Mexico. I think, well, I don't have the numbers for 2023 yet, but 2022, it was like almost 17,000 horses shipped across the border. And those products are going, you know, to Europe or Asia. The whole donkey situation is pretty wild. It's become a crazy situation where their hides and the gelatin that's made from their hides are used in Asia for different beauty products and vitality products. And so people wouldn't know that either. I mean, I saw an entire semi-truckload of donkeys leave the facility in Bowie to head across the border
to
be slaughtered. So
that's the other thing to highlight, though, is the way things are done at the auction. I mean, it is abusive and cruel the way they treat these animals. And to Aaron's point, they're just livestock. Like, they're just there to have their money, and they don't care. They don't care if the horses are broken. They don't care if they're about to die. It's for them to be sent off to someone else's benefit. And that's the education that we're trying to show people and show them what's really happening.
So. Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having us.
Yes.
And yeah, we're heading to Bowie again the very first weekend of May. I don't know if people are on Instagram, but at Rescue Ranchito, we'll have a lot of, we'll do kind of an ongoing story there to follow along. And then,
and all the donations.
We love a donation.
And that's rescueranchitos.org.
.org,
yep. .org.
Okay, Aaron, Lizzie, thanks.
Thank you.
Elite runner Lauren Fleshman wants to change how sports treat female athletes. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports that she'll be speaking in Park City next Monday.
Fleshman is famous for her achievements as a distance runner. She says women succeed in competition in spite of a system centered around men, and she thinks sports can do better by women and girls.
Essentially, from taking the men's sports model and then copying and pasting it when we finally let women and girls participate instead of built it around their needs and their physiological development, we experience a lot more harm.
Fleshman has made it her mission to change the face of women's sports. She says she, quote, found running as a place of belonging, and now she wants it to be a place of empowerment for girls too. She says puberty is a time when girls are especially vulnerable to quitting sports if they don't have support.
We know that girls are still dropping out of sports at twice the rate of boys. At age 14, and we lose half of girls in sports by age 17. We're not addressing the very basics of their embodied experience as they go through puberty and change.
She advocates for girls to have access to sports bras along with their team uniforms, and she wants to make it easy for everyone to talk about menstruation. Skipped periods are a warning sign for a host of health issues that affect female athletes.
If you can't talk about the period, and the period is the thing that needs to be happening regularly, then, and that's our first like red flag, our first line of defense in keeping girls healthy, then that's a problem. But what an easy fix.
She says transgender athletes, especially young trans girls, deserve to feel safe in sports too. Fleshman says sports should include as many people as possible.
Forcing them to compete in the boys category, that's just going to drive them out of sports. There's a lot to be gained by embracing all kinds of people on our sports team. It's a matter of respect.
Most of all, she says she wants a world where everyone is empowered to find joy in sports, something you don't have to be an elite athlete to achieve. Lauren Fleshman will discuss her book, Good for a Girl, A Woman Running in a Man's World, at the Park City Library, April 29th at 7 p.m. The event is free to attend. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.